and in the angels. Anybody who doesn't believe in angels? I don't believe in no angels. You got a moral problem. You got a moral problem. The angels represent forces or influences that are perfectly, perfectly obedient to God's rule and order. That's what the angels represent. Now, to say you don't believe that any creature or any creation or any agent is existing that perfectly obeys God, that's a moral problem. Yeah, that's a moral problem. Not if you're a Muslim, if you're anybody, you got a moral problem. People don't want to accept the unknown that God has revealed because it threatens their security. They're secured in their unrighteousness as long as they don't accept that there's something to condemn it. Or that there's a different situation. That things are not existing as I see them. Things are exist differently from what I see. To accept that is to change their position. So they won't hold on to that disbelief, which stems from moral weakness, the absence of moral strength in the creature. In the angels and the book. You see, the angels come before the book. Angels come before the book. Why? Because man, before he saw a book, he believed that there were agents out there that were influencing things, and they were part of God's creation and serving God's will. Yes, before he even saw a book. The primitive man, knowing how to read, he hadn't even developed a language, but he was fearing the lightning, fearing the thunder, and turning toward God. God, don't let us distract you. Huh? Yes. And he felt that those forces out there were obeying God. There's something behind that. And it's obeying a God. So he would pray to what he thought was behind it and ask its protection from those forces that were carrying out orders without any way to be influenced. Say, hey, I can't influence that to change. I better talk to the one behind it. Say, that doesn't hear me, doesn't respond to me. Say, and the month of Ramadan, nights of Ramadan, and the angels are sent, following every order. They don't say, it's too late. You can't say, hey, don't come back. Can you hold up 5 minutes? No, they don't hear that. They can't hear that. All they can do is just follow order. And you got something like that coming against you, you say, hey, what's behind it? Say, oh, Lord, please. I can't talk to you. I can't talk to your host. I can't talk to this army you sitting down here. Say, please, say for me. Don't send this on me. Delay it for a while. Give me another chance, please. So man has had that belief before he had books. So then the book comes, and the book. See how the belief is progressing? The development of faith, the belief is progressing. The development of taqwa in the human being is progressing. First, that it is not phony. It is not pure ritual. It didn't start that way. Man didn't start by having a ritual. I'm going to pray this object, pray to that direction. No, it started as a fear and an awareness of a God and a fear to disobey him. That's how it started. And he wasn't phony when he started worshiping that God. He was as innocent as a newborn baby. If he did that, that's what he thought he should do. Oh, God. Whatever he did, that's what he thought was best. He wasn't phony. He wasn't putting on. But later in man's history, when he loses that pure spirit, that pure faith, then it becomes a phony thing. Oh, God. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. We got a sick sister here, God. And she's poor. She got many children, Lord. Oh, he didn't start off phony like that. when he first realized that he was threatened and he needed God, he was a for real man. So righteousness is not turning your face and eating bread. That's formality. That's ritual. Huh? Not that ritual and formality is condemned. It's condemned when the substance is not there. The real thing must be there. And then the ritual can be appreciated. But still we don't turn east and west because God is in every direction. As he said in this says in this holy book, for whichever way you turn, you will find the presence of God. And the messengers, and to believe in the messengers, and to spend of your sustenance. So not to believe in the messenger, God can communicate message to his creature, to not to do that is a moral problem. To not believe that, pardon me, is a moral problem. And to spend of your sustenance. You got money, you got wealth, and you just keep it all for yourself, that's a moral problem. You don't believe in giving nobody or any help, you got a moral problem. If it's not righteous, it's not moral. Not morally sound, not morally right. Out of love for him, because there are some who give and give a lot. Hey man, want $100? Give you $100. That doesn't mean he's moral. That doesn't mean he's morally sound. Because he gave you $100, maybe he wants you to love him more than you love another buddy you got. His motive could be corrupt. His motive could be sick. Huh? Yes. So many men will give their money, but the motive is sick. That's why the qualification here to come under righteousness is that you give for the love of God. And what is the love of God? God is the embodiment of all purity. God is the embodiment of all that is right and perfect. Huh? So the love for that truth and righteousness and purity, the love that is in me for such things, for such influences, or for such principles, or for such objects, the love in me for that makes me stand above the pettiness of trying to give you some money so you will love me. Huh? Oh, buddy. See, you don't know, I've been preaching for 400 years. Yeah, as soon as they brought me over here from Jamestown, Virginia, and they put me on shores, I started preaching. But the white man was so threatening, I was preaching silently. But I've been preaching for about 400 years or more. To spend out of love for him, for God, and for your kin. See, God first, and for your kin. Now, that's the real God that says, love me. But you ain't right if you don't love your kin. Huh? Yeah, God said, love me. You should love me. But God never say, love me. God says, something wrong with you if you don't love me. He never says love me. He's too big to ask you to love him. But he just says, hey, something wrong with you if you don't love me. And you don't love your kin. There's something wrong with you if you don't love your kin. I don't mean the relative that took your car, your new car. And you haven't seen him since. And you found out he wrecked it. And then talked bad about your bad mom. I'm not talking about that relative. You don't have to love him. But they say love a bad relative. They say love relatives. You're supposed to love your relatives. So you don't love him now in his state that he's in. But as a relative, you still love him, right? You wish that he would come back from that, change his ways and be right, you know? Wish you could get things like they used to be again, you know? Yes, so the love for relative is natural like the love for God. so often. See, now here responsibility's coming up, right? Responsibility's growing. Love for kin, and for orphans, and for the needy, and for the wayfarer, the child of the road, who doesn't have anywhere to live, or in your town and just on the road, don't have a home to go to. For those who beg, for those who ask for help, and for the ransoming of slaves, for the freeing of slaves. See how the issues of that time are brought into focus? But now we have an issue. The issue of the race is the need for economic representation. Huh? Some kind of economic parity or some kind of economic representation for the race. As a race, we are economically unrepresented. We have our leaders who are speaking on that need. This is our need, the need of Christ. They're right. That is a need. But first things first. You're making more progress with your business life when your morals were better. And most of all, when you had faith in God. For the ransoming of slaves, for the freeing of slaves. To be steadfast in prayer. To be steadfast in prayer. Well, our time is still asked. To be steadfast in prayer. You know, a lot of people, they pray, but they pray in a relaxed position. They pray on their knees, leaning on something. Oh, Lord, oh, Lord, what? Or they pray like this, right? The Muslim begins his prayer not from a relaxed position. He begins his prayer from a vigil, from a position of vigil. Huh? Man stands like this when he's alert. He begins his prayer from a position of vigil. Huh? He's alert. His attentions are alert. His body is rigid. Allahu Akbar. He begins praying from a position of strength, not a position of weakness. But he, in order to meet his obligation to his Lord, to render himself, he starts, he's rigid and he's confident and he's firm and he's alert. And then he starts recognizing his God. What did that tell us? It is not the ignorant man. It is not the unestablished man. It is not the man who's down and beaten that recognizes his Lord in the right way, but it's the man who stands up and he's alert. He's the one who recognizes his God's best. Yes. And then from that recognition of his God, he is willing then to humble himself as a newborn baby before his Lord. He goes down into sejda, the best position of prayer. But it's the best position. Why? It is the best position because the strong man says, my Lord is deserving of my complete submission. It wasn't a weak man that saw that. It was a strong man that saw that. Allahu Akbar. To stand fast, to be steadfast in prayer, and to practice regular charity. Yes. See, now charity coming again, but it's coming after the man has stood as he should. He has stood upright before his Lord. He has stood upright before his Lord with his eyes open in dignity. Huh? His eyes wasn't closed. His eyes open. Muslim ain't supposed to close his eyes when he started. You know, open your eyes. Right.
is wonderful.
And now, says, and to be charitable. Why? Because this standing position indicates that this man is no fool. The innocent child without knowledge prays, lying down or any kind of way, crying, sobbing. But here's a man, he ain't sobbing. He starts off his prayer, he's all together. Like he's getting ready to go march on the enemy. Right. Or getting ready to defend something, right? And he stands up like that and he declares that God is greater. And begin going through gestures to tell you that I render my complete soul and the spirit and everything in complete submission to that God. Now that's a man that you better think twice about before you come against him. If he's doing that with knowledge, if he's doing that with knowledge, you better think twice before you mess with that man. Because if he can't deal with you, the angels will help him. Yeah, that's a precious man. That's a precious man, if he's doing that with knowledge. Yes. To fulfill contracts. See, such a man, he will meet those obligations. To fulfill contracts. See, the responsibility is coming more home, right? Coming more home. Coming home to the family life, first of kin, the kin, and to your obligation to any human being that needs help, that's suffering or mistreated, the slave and the wayfarer. And now to your business acquaintance, your business associate. Hey, you have a contract, you in some kind of agreement, and you're supposed to carry it out. Third, hey, you're supposed to be faithful to those contracts. And to be firm and patient during times of pain and suffering. So what Muslim is prepared best for such? Is alert, intelligent, open-minded, sanely thinking Muslim. You can't depend on no Holy Ghost congregation to do great things. What did Paul say about them? As much as they criticize Paul. I think a lot of times the reason why so many churches don't like Paul is because Paul said all that talking in tongues ain't nothing but babble. Ain't nobody understand it but the person that's speaking it. It's not made for communication. It's not intended for communication or edification. It edifies nothing. He had his faults, but he was right there. So, dear believers, when we begin to feel the bite or the pressure of misfortune, of bad circumstances, we are supposed to reflect on what God has revealed in the Quran. We are supposed to be readers of the Quran. And if you read it often enough, you're going to run upon verses, you're going to come upon verses that will put you back on the right track, that will give you strength again, that will clear your vision for you again. But if you just run into these things that knock you off of your feet and trouble your mind and beat down your spirit, and all you do is just sit somewhere and groan and moan and complain, you'll never get up. No Muslim should stay down in misery. We may get knocked down, but no Muslim should stay down, because this book will lift you up no matter how great the force was that knocked you down. I know, because I'm still standing. They have kept me up on my feet. And I have run against some terrible things. Lost my mother and my father right behind each other. And just because I took a position for God, people thought I didn't love my mother and didn't love my father. That was a terrible burden to carry while you're waiting on people to see your goodness and understand what you had to do. But I didn't fall down.